Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. I'm the boss. Need the info.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm sitting at the controls, Al Warren. And on the East Coast, we have Mr. Michael Hawley.
Hello, Al.
Well, you're back. You've been gone for a while.
Oh, yeah. So I'm back, ready to go. So
had his COVID and had his shots and everything. So you're all set.
Yep. Yeah, only a little bit of scar tissue in the lung, and I'm ready to go.
Well, at least it was only in the lungs, you know.
Yeah,
there's a report about the penis, hey, coming up now.
See, oh, my gosh.
Two different universities now. 20 men have had damage from COVID inside their penis, so just look out.
Jeez.
I'm just giving you. And you're old, too, right? You're
very, very. Yeah, just a month older than you. Just remember that, Al.
Yeah, that's right. I'm still 58.
Oh, I'm 59, so it's...
Old man. Okay, well, now we have a special. We have a double header today. We have two guests writing under the name of O.E. Tierman, and we're going to be talking about the new book, The Hands Were Given, Aces High, Joker's Wild, Book 1. So I'll introduce to you our two guests. It's Olivia. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm wonderful. And then we've got E.S.
Hey, Alan. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. It's always good to talk to people that are writers, you know. How did you guys, before we get into the book and into all the what you've been up to, how did you two meet and get into writing together?
We actually met about a decade ago now, give or take, when Olivia set up an Irish language speaking club through Meetup. And I was the only person who showed up to the first meeting, so we started talking, realized that we both liked play-by-post roleplay. And at the time, I was running a site for that, so I invited her in to write some stories collaboratively together in that format. And it just kind of rolled from there.
Well, that's interesting. But how did you, were you like a writer to begin with? Like, were you already kind of into writing and wanted to be a writer?
I was. I've been writing since I was 12. And I started trying to pursue traditional publishing around the end of my high school years. It didn't work, thank goodness, because I needed a lot more practice. But I've been writing for as long as I could remember, and I kind of roped Olivia into it.
And it's funny because I grew up with a very strong storytelling tradition in my family, but storytelling was an oral tradition that was for the home and the community. And I had a nascent idea that writers lived in ivory towers on academic campuses and didn't leave. And people like me didn't write books. And it took getting to know ES and getting out and about in Denver to realize that, hey, normal people can do this.
I mean, I wouldn't call us normal, but
well, yeah, usually as I, loss, maybe? Well, as I get to know people, and even as myself writing, the further I get into life, the less normal I think I am. So, but there must have been a point, like even if you're a writer or a storyteller, and I find this a particular point in your life that you felt confident enough to publish something you've written. And what do you think that thing was that happened to each of you to make you feel confident enough to let the world read your stuff? Start with a yes.
Oh, gosh.
No, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I like making guests think. Well, no, I mean, because, we all have our backgrounds where we're either storytelling or we want to write, mm-hmm. but we don't and all that. But there's usually a thing that we kind of go, no, I can do this. You were thinking of going to a traditional publisher and it wasn't working. There must have been some sort of something in you that thought, well, I'm good enough even if you weren't quite ready.
I mean, for this particular series, that thing was Olivia, quite honestly. We had written a draft of the entire series, and I was content to just put it on the shelf and let it be a thing that we wrote for ourselves, and it was cathartic because we were dealing with a lot of things that were coming up around 2016. And Olivia pestered me into publishing it, and I still freak out every time I think about our books on Amazon and the fact that people are reading our books, but they're there. So I have to pretend to be confident.
So Olivia is your confidence.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, 2016 was a pretty boring year. Nothing much happened.
I mean, compared to 2020.
Yeah, 2020.
Boy, well, that kind of ties in a lot, you know, the world we've lived in for the last, let's say, 5 years or a little longer, maybe. A lot's happened and a lot of drama going on. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, so your book is kind of, it's science fiction, it's dystopian. It's kind of got a lot of stuff going on that is relatable to this world. So what made you, you know, I don't know if I say write it, but what made you kind of go in the direction that you did? Like, what is it you hope people get out of the book?
Well, actually, it has an interesting backstory to it. We started writing this series in 2016 as things were getting dark, as partly catharsis, and partly it was my streak of, let's call it perverse optimism. We had heard a really nihilistic streak in all the community conversations in our town of Denver. And a lot of the conversations kept coming back to, we're screwed. And like I said, I have a perverse streak of resolve in me. And I said, okay, fine, let's posit we're screwed and let's write our way out of the darkest version of America we can imagine back into something good to prove, yeah, it can happen. Even if we fell all the way down into the dark, we could get back out of it somehow, some way. And so we started writing this series where it's a very dark version of America, but we write into that world a community of people who support each other, take care of each other, tease each other, are each other's family, And it was our way to prove to ourselves, even if things go all the way down into the dark, we will find a way back out.
Olivia, or yes, you need Olivia. She's this optimist for everything. I love it.
Yeah. We actually balanced each other out really well. We got super, super lucky in picking co-writers in that respect, because personality-wise, we have enough in common that we can get along and we can understand each other. If my anxiety is acting up, Olivia can empathize with that and we can talk about that. But also, we have enough difference where Olivia is super optimistic and running ahead and I'm a little bit more reserved and keeping her from completely jumping off cliffs that we can't see the bottom of.
Right.
So, unlike the real world, I guess you have the power to make things end in a positive light or a better light. Is that sort of what you want to do with this book series?
A little bit more than that. It's not just happily ever after. It's the future doesn't have to be dark. The future can get better than it is today. And in fact, it has to if it's worth living. So what are we going to do about it? I would say instead of a happy ending, we aim for an ending that gives hope and gives more than hope, resolve. Yeah, okay, we can do this.
Well, I like that.
Yeah, so there we go. We just had Peter Tatchell on. You know, he's the there's a Netflix about him, Hating Peter Tatchell, and he said that you got to kind of close your eyes and dream of the world that you'd want it to be, and then wake up and make it happen.
Exactly.
Very, very positive. I recommend seeing the Netflix show for sure. So your characters in this book. So Aiden, who is Aiden? Where does Aiden come from?
Aiden came a lot from my personal experiences, struggling with gender identity and mental illness and feeling accepted and being able to find community. Like Olivia said earlier, we started writing this partially as catharsis, and I needed an outlet for all of that was sitting in my brain, and that kind of all got mostly got channeled into Aiden, who took those issues, I don't want to say to an extreme, but further than my individual self has. Wow, I'm speaking really well today.
You're doing fine.
Yeah, nice. Aiden came from me and my struggles and my desire to see that representation on the page that I hadn't seen before.
So this is really a, besides being a great fiction, this is a self-help book too. Looks like.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it was for us writing it, but
yeah.
One of the things we wanted was to provide that representation and that hope, and to say, hey, friends in marginalized communities, you're not alone. And if we can band together, here's a way that we could potentially do it, and here's some role models in a way, don't necessarily follow their pranks, but follow how they learn to support each other and how they learn to communicate. And if we can do that, maybe we can improve our own communities and the society around us.
Yes, if you have a commanding officer, definitely don't put shaving cream in his shoes. However, it's good for writing purposes.
Oh, come on. Yeah, have some fun.
But yeah, we definitely wanted to give role models for a number of different issues. So there's Aiden, the cast of characters is an ensemble, so there are a number of different characters with different issues going on. And each of them, in their own way, heals and grows by being part of this community.
Well, I was just going to ask about your ethnobotany. Is that part of the book, or is that any characters with that?
No one character specifically gets it, but it is definitely it went into the backstory. For example, careful readers will notice that a lot of the food is based in amaranth because it's 112 on a good day in the summertime in our future world. Wheat can't survive in a lot of places anymore. So they've replaced wheat as the staple crop with amaranth. And a lot of my research has gone into, if the temperature keeps going up, what will Colorado look like? Well, it'll look like New Mexico. So none of my ethnobotany has specifically gone in, but I'm trained in horticulture, and a lot of my extrapolations from my own research has gone into the detail building of the world, which has been fun because there are a lot of plants that I have seen in the Southwest, in the deep South, that I would never want to deal with. And I make our characters deal with them.
Yeah, okay.
I wonder, so you said each character has their own issue or challenge that they're trying to overcome in a positive way or deal with. Where do you draw your characters from? People you know? Is it more than just personal?
It's a combination of things. There's some personal, there's some people we know, there's some inspiration from news stories from around the world, things we pick up on the internet, basically anything that we found particularly interesting and compelling for us that made sense within the scope of the story, we tried to explore at least a little bit.
So another question is, because of 2016 and all of the stuff going on in the United States, you could almost get yourself into trouble on certain readers because mm-hmm. you are kind of taking a side or something. So is that why you approach it slightly differently so that it would be attractive to all readers?
Oh, we are unabashedly taking a side. We don't even try not to take a side. Because we're taking the side of the communities that we're close to and communities that I've grown up in. And a lot of those are communities that have been marginalized. And so this is a story about scrappy underdogs who've been told that they're worthless, refusing to accept that and saying, no, you will take care of my people and you will respect us and you will treat us like human beings. Mm-hmm. And until you do, we'll resist.
Well, I see that, and which is great. But do you kind of, you don't bring, do you bring up, is it part of a political kind of thing going on so people would catch on, or you are going to hook some of those other sides to kind of see the reality?
It would be really nice if we could. We try to create characters that can be empathized with, and we try to show that people can be, for better or worse, humans can adapt to anything, including whatever they were taught as kids, for better or worse. But they can also unlearn very bad things. So one of our characters is, spoilers, from the uppermost echelon of society. And he was taught some very classist, ableist, terrible things when he was young. And he unlearned all of that in order to learn to treat his colleagues and his friends like equals. So we do try to show that it doesn't matter where you come from. You can be a decent person. But also, there's a certain amount of, you can't put everything on the cover. So we went with an aesthetic that is eye-catching and exciting. And then hopefully people will pick up the book and be invested enough in the characters that they'll accept a different way of being human and being alive in the world than they're used to for the sake of, oh, wow, that blew up.
Yeah. Well, it's so easy. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, but it's so easy to drink the Kool-Aid and you're all set.
As far as the political goes, Mike, we don't have anything necessarily super overt, like we don't drop names, but we do have some some things in there where if you're paying attention, you will understand right. what we're referring to.
Great. That has to start happening more.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. It sounds like you've got a lot invested in the story of yourselves and of the world around you. So when you complete it, book one here, and you look back, how do you think it's changed you, each one of you?
A lot. I mean, through the process of writing this, not only did I have the chance to face kind of that inner turmoil of myself, but I also learned how to communicate better because Olivia and I were tossing things back and forth. And like I mentioned earlier, we both have anxiety, so we would accidentally be triggering each other sometimes. And learning both about how to interact with other people and how to better interact and own my own truth has been a really intense process, for lack of a better term, that writing this book has definitely helped push me through.
And I think I've changed a lot in that I've been able to stand in my own ground a lot more. I come from a very strong Midwestern nice culture, and I used to just disappear into the wallpaper at every opportunity. If someone disagreed with me, I immediately apologized and backed down. That was my training. And I have learned, I suppose, courage through this process. Mm-hmm. And I've learned better communication for sure. And I suppose I simply have learned that I don't need to make space for other people all the time. I deserve some space too.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you hoping to do in the series? Like, this is book one, it said. So how many more books do you plan to do? Or do you have this all kind of laid out? Have you thought about it, or are you just going to wing it, play it by ear?
We actually have a draft of the entire series ready. It's most of it's still in rough draft. We're looking at about 8 books total, plus a potential young adult trilogy set afterwards. Yeah. Right now we're relaunching the series, so we have more than one book out, but we're really focusing on trying to get book one into the hands of folks who want to read it, get that hook in for when we relaunch everything else. But yeah, going into publishing it with an entire draft of the series, I think, has been really helpful because it's something we don't have to freak out about. When we publish every book, oh no, what are we doing for the next one?
That leads to a question I have is for both of you. With you ever look at Al, he's really good at social media, trying to get an audience. Mm-hmm. Have you been doing that as well? And I bet for ES that would be difficult for you. But have you been trying to do that, making yourself available on different types of social media?
We do have social media accounts. I do social media for my day job, so I leave most of it to Olivia.
And I pull it off by, so I'm a landscaper by trade. I own a small landscaping business. In the middle of winter, I go on Buffer, and all year I've been saving anything that makes us laugh or looks important or is interesting. And I sort through this huge folder of things I've saved and things that caught my eye. And I load up Buffer with a year's worth of general social media posts. And then we write up books that we've liked in our own genre. And we do a weekly, but don't quote me on that, blog of reviews of podcasts and books and anything we've bumped into that we liked And that has been a really good way to keep us reading in the genre so that we make sure we know what's going on with our own genre, but also make a lot of great connections with a lot of really cool people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've definitely gotten one or two gentle comments along the lines of, you look so active, but you never answer anything. And we're like, yeah, because all of that is preloaded.
Oh, I can relate to that, but, you know, because I don't interact like I should. A lot of people comment on that. I think the problem is because it's got to a point where I get, sometimes I get 200 messages a day. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's not very nice. And so I found myself following.
That's just from me.
That's just from me. You know, because in the world today, it seems to be there's a lot of people that really enjoy hating you for whatever mm-hmm. reason. And so what they do is they follow you and they continue to hate you and they send you three messages, a week. Mm-hmm. Three emails saying how much you're disgusting or whatever. And so they kind of do this. And when you get so many, after a while, the very first is to respond. And then, of course, then you learn, no, it's better not to. But then it's hard to start going through them all to find out which is good and which is bad. Mm-hmm. So you just start kind of – so I've almost kind of walked away from that end of it. Because if you get too involved in that, then you lose focus on what you're trying to accomplish, like your writing or whatever it is that the person tries to do.
So, right, and we've got books to write.
Yeah, and not only that, the thing is what happens is I think it absorbs into how you write then. You know, if you're holding on to this anger, if you're having a fight with people that are online and all this stuff, it really doesn't mean anything because it's not that important. It really isn't. But you get so wrapped up, then when you go to write, it changes the way you write. So I think it's probably a good thing to stay away from. I mean, I get it from all ends because I'm autistic, I'm gay, I'm colorblind, I've got it all. And people love to jump on all of it because I make mistakes. I'm human. I think the best thing you can do is own who you are. Mm-hmm. Take it and just run with it. Like, I am who I am. I'm not any different offline as I am on or on air, off air. It's just, this is who I am. And a lot of people dislike that. But at the same time, I'm not going to change who I am. So I think that's an important point. And I also get the feeling that's kind of what you're trying to accomplish with this book and the book series.
Yeah, definitely. Although I'll admit a much more prosaic reason on my part. 12 hours in a garden when it's hit 100 degrees,
ooh,
you don't have any brains left when you get home. So I love my gardens. They sap my energy in the summertime. So I pretty much don't turn the thing on. And I'm lucky if I get a chapter in the morning. But yeah, it can get very toxic very quickly. And I have some issues with anxiety and social shame. So I'm very selective and very careful about how I interact with any of that. And I tell myself, yes, it's important to be on social media, but I have the right to draw the line and say, mm-hmm. no, you don't get my energy. That's for my creative stuff. You don't get my energy. That's for my writing. Also, we are with a publicist and a press, and Amphibian Press and Creative Edge Publicity have been hugely helpful for us because they essentially sort the wheat from the chaff somewhat for us and say, why don't you talk to so-and-so instead of us wandering around the dangerous terrain of social media saying, hi, can we be friends? Yeah. Which is a good way to get bitten by something or someone.
But yeah, like you were saying, Alan,
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
The sense of community and the sense of being able to own yourself and to stand in your own powers is definitely something that we want to get through with this book. In the writing of it, we both learned a little bit more how to do that for ourselves, coming from various marginalized communities. And not to sound too preachy, because it is still a fun sci-fi book, but there is kind of that hope for our readers to be able to find that power and that strength and that community within our characters. And kind of to that end, we have resources in the back of every book that deal with a lot of what our characters go through in that book. So we've got mental health resources, trans resources, queer resources, things of that nature, because we do want this to be a fun book and a fun series, but we also want to be able to help people with it.
In fact, things to go the way they did, let's say around 15, 16, like did it all sort of, because I look at things and I'm still shocked. I'm still surprised, because it seemed to me like the 90s were a good time. And you know what I mean? Not that things are great ever when you look back. You can always say it is, but
I totally get you. Because
people were not so angry, I think.
In the 90s, it felt like we were on an upward slope. It felt like we were learning to accept each other and learning to be kind of that, more of that melting pot. We obviously weren't there, but we were working on it, and then we kind of backslid. But no, we did not expect it at all, despite what happens in the books.
We do have some running jokes about the fact that certain things were not intended to be prophetic.
So it's your fault? Is that what we're saying?
I mean, if it is, then hopefully the good can happen too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you have to kind of hope at the end of the day. I mean, it seems like every bad thing that happens to us, eventually something good comes out of it. It can sound terrible to say that, but eventually it turns into something good, or, you know, hopefully it does anyway, right? We yeah. want the best for each generation that comes out. And, and I don't know, cause I feel very distant to a lot of things happening now too. And I'm only 58, not 59. God, if I was that old, I don't know. I probably would break down. It's too much, right?
Now, remember, Al, I have the body of a 57-year-old, so you watch it.
Yeah, there you go. well, I just don't know, where it's all going to go. And I think that each year goes by, it seems like I'm more distanced from the young generation. Do you like the way it's sort of turning out in the world now? Or do you, as in now that things are starting to change back again a little, do you feel it's going in the right direction?
Well, so I will preface this by saying I'm a farm kid originally. And this is my gross farm kid metaphor. When you're cleaning a septic wound, you have to get the pus out first. And I think there are a lot of things that we had to see at their worst before we would face them head on and start to make amends and start to improve in tangible ways instead of just saying, oh, tell the kids we're a melting pot. Because obviously that didn't help. And I was one of those kids who was in school in the 90s. And I'm still standing here with my head spinning going, this is not what I was taught in school. But that said, I can see that now we've had to face it head on as a country. And we've had to really look this stuff in the eye. Essentially, we've had to look our own demons in the eye and realize that they're there. I think there is growth in that, and there is value. I want to say this very carefully because it should not have cost the number of lives that were lost for us to learn that we needed to do things differently. But I feel like we're starting to clean the pus out of the wounds of this country. And when pus comes out of a wound, it's disgusting. But after that, you start to heal.
Also, the way I see it is, it's kind of like the last stand for a certain segment of the population where now they're going to be more of a minority. So it's a big fear thing. And so it's like this was their opportunity. So I'm an optimist as well. So I see things going in the correct direction. So I think your book is kind of a perfect timing for this.
I'll be the resident pessimist. I'm not going to get into why, because that will take longer than we have left. But I do think that having the book and having the hope in the book and the hope in my co-writer definitely helps me face what I think is happening, which is nice. So.
And this is why we write scenes where Aiden is being pessimistic and his boyfriend turns to him and says, stop that.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to be that way because, we have hope and then some things don't work out. And so we lose mm-hmm. faith, right? That's sort of how it is. But, as you were saying, you got to clean the septic out and, we see the pus every time it leaves Mar-a-Lago. So
I didn't say it.
Nice. Yeah, that was Al. He was a Canadian. Don't worry about it.
We're yeah, I'm Canadian. I'm allowed to say whatever I want.
Nice.
About the pus that lives down there. I'm still kind of in shock with the whole thing, but it's just what we got to deal with and we got to make it better. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about the book and you talk about the mental health resources and stuff, so do you think that's it's in a good place right now, mental health resources in the country or not?
Oh, God, no.
No. So what do you think the problem is there? Like what – do you think people are really scared to face the reality of the mental condition? And I can say this for a lot of things, not only with sexual identity and all that other things, but there's another shooting today, right? There's all this stuff going on in the U.S. that goes on nowhere else in the world mm-hmm. to the extent. So you have to attribute that to some sort of mental problem or too much pressure, or there's something going on to make people do this.
This is another thing I could rant about for quite a while. So I'll try to boil it down pretty quick. Our mental health system is absolutely awful. There is no support. It's incredibly difficult to get help. There is a very, very intense stigma associated with mental health and seeking mental health services, regardless of what you're seeking them for, which prevents a lot of people from even attempting to find accessible resources. Guns are more easily accessible than therapists and cheaper. And there is a lot of pressure to succeed financially and constantly be productive for your employer. One of the things that we didn't intend to be prophetic, but kind of is in a way, is the corporations in our book literally owning people. And if you look at it from a certain point of view, we exist, and this isn't necessarily purely an American thing, but we exist to make money for the capitalist machine, for our employers. They don't care about our mental health, about our physical health, about our social lives. As long as we can make money for them, that's all that matters. We're replaceable. And that is hardcore awful on the mental health, to know that every day you go to work, you spend 40 hours a week with someone who thinks that you're replaceable and doesn't care. And we don't have good vacation. We don't have family leave. We don't have a lot of things that a lot of the rest of the world has in any sense, like even a marginalized, a tiny little bit to help. And then if you add on top of that, all of the bigotry and the hatred that gets continually cycled through our media and through our leaders into our society, it just becomes a cluster, and it becomes this pressure cooker for people who have no other way to express themselves except through violence, except through lashing out, because that's the only avenue left to them.
Yes, you should write a book with Olivia, maybe.
I know, right?
Well, well, and it's sad because it's a multi-layered problem. I come from a family that had many generations of walk it off, you're fine, was the mindset, but we had a few suicides a generation. Well, my generation is finally saying to the younger generations, we got to get help. We got to do something about this. And then we run into the fact that the entire system for mental health care and resources is vile. And you can kind of understand why our forebears just said, walk it off, because
it was the only option available.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's ridiculous too, right? You know, I don't understand it. And the health care is just crazy.
Especially when we're quote unquote the richest country in the world.
Yeah, for the corporations, I think that's one of the things that stuck out most about your book, was about corporations really kind of owning the country. And it's sort of something, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny because other countries, like even up in Canada, they're worried about that kind of mentality leaking over, and it does. And because there's still a lot of social activities, like, you know, the medicine and all that, that mm-hmm. you don't want to lose that. Because, man, once you see it, like I broke my ankle in Seattle at work, and what do? I go home to Vancouver to get my surgery or anything done, because it's 10 times better and it's free.
Right, exactly. Well, and something that I want to underline for listeners is that we didn't make this stuff up. We drew on what's happening now, but more than that, we drew on the American Gilded Age, which was roughly the 1860s to the 1890s. A lot of the corporate control that we write about was already done by Rockefeller and Carnegie and Pullman and the robber barons, as we call them in America. They had company towns where they decided that you lost your home and your livelihood if you didn't say, I think it was Carnegie, I may be wrong on that, said, if you don't go to church this many weeks in a row, we kick you out of town. People deciding for you what your morality should be, your livelihood should be, your place in society and your worth and your expendability should be, that's already happened here in America. And one of the underlying themes of our book is, let's not have it happen again, because we're headed there. And this is where I get less optimistic and more righteously furious, is I know enough history that I can see us slipping into a second Gilded Age. And like you just said, Al, our healthcare for a country with the wealth and the resources that we have is vile. It is pathetic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an abomination.
Well, yes. It's really bad. You know, like I have a family doctor in Canada I can go see anytime. It's just totally different a different feel and a different type. And there's no system perfect. So people that say, oh, well, they did this or they do this wrong. It's like, no, there's no system that's perfect. But I'll tell you, I have access to both, and I have the medical in both. And I'll tell you, I don't even give it a second thought after being alive only 58 years, not 59. I realized that there's nothing I would choose to have done south of the border.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what's interesting, Al, is that about 20 years ago, I think, that there was misinformation passed on to our electorate in the United States saying that, oh, go to Canada and you're going to be in lines forever.
Yeah.
You know, that's what everybody down here thinks. And then, but it was actually a scam, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
So
I remember hearing that, right?
I hear all sorts of stuff, and none of it's
my partner
true.
Lives in British Columbia. Yeah. They recently started therapy. It took them about a week to find, or not therapy, sorry, they started medication. It took them about a week to get a prescription. It took me 2 years to find a therapist.
Wow.
To start trying to find a prescription.
And my own perspective on this, aside from my family issues and the stories I've heard from some of my cousins, is that my grandma, I'll tell you this because the statute has run out and she's old enough that she won't get in trouble, but she used to be the town, we called her the town help woman. If you couldn't afford the doctor, you would go to my grandma. She was a registered nurse, but on the side, she would help people who couldn't afford the hospital in this little town in Wisconsin. And that tells you a lot when little towns have these people who will help out on the sly and can get arrested because they're practicing medicine without a license. I do not recommend people practicing medicine without a license by any means.
No.
This tells you a lot about our country, that when I was a child and I'm in my early 30s, I was watching my grandmother help people get splints on their wrists around the kitchen table because they couldn't afford to go to the hospital in America.
Yeah.
I got to tell you how coincidental that right now I'm writing a book called Jack the Ripper in Canada, which is actually, I'm a true crime guy like Al. So, but what's interesting is in the mid 19th century there, the United States refused to have any kind of licensing because that took away your rights. But in Canada, because they were part of the British Empire, that they had that. And it really, what the psychopath that I deal with, he was what they called an Indian herb doctor, but he didn't do it to help people. He did it to make money and scam. But mm-hmm. It was that battle right there. So it's kind of interesting how you said that.
Well, and the fact that it's still happening. I mean, over here we called those guys snake oil salesmen because, we have a lot of them. But my grandma was literally, somebody would come in and just say, can I get a splint? Or is this cough bad? Should I actually go to the hospital? Or we ran out of medicine. Is there anything we can use around the house so we don't have to pay for more medicine? And the reason I bring that up at all is this should not be happening in a country as big and as wealthy as ours.
We should not have to crowdfund our medical needs.
Yeah. Yeah, and hope that the lady next door has a splint when we get hurt. That's not right.
Well, speaking of people who care, but actually the opposite side, because Al and I, we like to talk about people, psychopaths, psychopathy and sociopathy, and serial offenders, serial killers. Isn't there a place in your book for one of those guys that you could really have an interesting story to?
I think we have one later in the series.
Yes, later in the series we have a couple. But actually, our upper echelon character talks about that because he is what's called citizen excellent standing. He is genetically modified to be what his corporation thinks is perfect, but his parents bribed the lab so that his brain would be unmodified. Most citizen excellent standing people can watch someone in agony and then go home and have dinner and not be bothered at all. They've been genetically modified to no longer have much remorse or much
empathy.
Not just empathy, but lingering thoughts don't happen for them. things happen and then they're done. And it was originally an idea to make it easier for them to have good mental health. Well, what it turned into is a whole generation of a dynasty of psychopaths being in the positions of CEO, CFO, all those top tier positions all belong to psychopaths.
Well, that actually is true.
I was going to say not yeah. a whole lot different, but you know.
But now they're genetically modified that way.
Don't give the Republicans an idea. That's...
yeah, definitely thought about that.
Well, if they won't be doing vaccines, they'll be doing that. So, you know, it's great.
I mean, we're already getting shit with the vaccine, right? So.
Well, yeah, I go in for extra. I want that. I want as many as possible. Get me shipped. They can all follow me. That's cool. Wow. So now, where do people come find you? Like, do you guys have a website together, or a website, or a location on social media that you think people would have their best fun finding you?
Yeah, the website is oetearman, oetearmann.com. From there, you can find links to buy the books pretty much anywhere books are sold. We do suggest, if you can, to try and buy local in indie, but also know that that's not always possible. Also on the website, you can find links to our personal work and our social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter most often. We also have a newsletter you can sign up for and all that good stuff as well.
Great. And of course, we're going to link that to ours as well. So anybody listening, or if they listen to the backlog and they're listening, they can do one click and it'll bring them right to your site. Look out. Wow. So did you seep COVID or any sort of a virus into any of this series?
We did. And we actually have, what is it, book six, Liv?
Book five. We're book on five. Book six right now.
Well, no, but that was in.
Yeah, that was book five. That was Draw Dead, which came out this March. Right. And yeah, we talked about the psychopaths a moment ago. Well, there's a bioweapon in book five. So it's not exactly a pandemic, but
it operates like one.
Yes. And if you happen to get any supplies on the black market, you probably get sick and you probably die.
And in our defense, we came up with this idea several years before 2020, before COVID was a thing.
Yeah,
and had a moment while we were cleaning it up for publication of going, should we actually publish this in the middle of an actual pandemic?
Yeah, ES had that moment. I had a moment of kicking the wall and going, are you kidding?
So you guys did that too. Boy, it's all yeah. you guys. But you know, I have to ask, anytime someone has a virus or pandemic or something going on in their books, so did you have like anti-vaxxers and all this sort of stuff too in there, or did that not come up? Did you ever think that there would be people like going around like they are now?
Well, we do have, so our story revolves around one unit in a resistance force. We did have a lot of Schadenfreude level fun with another unit. So Aiden calls this other commander and says, okay, we're doing this, we're doing this, we're doing this. Can you help us out with XYZ? And this guy says, it's just a cold. We're staying on mission. You guys can do whatever you want. Well, a few days later, his entire base is dead. So we did have some Schadenfreude fun with that. And so, yes, we definitely used that, but not to the degree that it actually happened in the real world, which was terrifying. My mom and several other relatives are in the armed forces, and I simply drew on that. It's fine. Walk it off. Oh, you're passing out. Walk it off. Mindset that yeah. is so deleterious in the American armed forces and leads to so many suicides in our armed forces. But also had some cruel fun at a character's expense. Oh, you're going to ignore this disease? Fine. See how that goes for you.
We definitely didn't have people going around shooting other people for wearing masks, though. Yeah. Not yeah. Yeah.
And partly because that would have been way too dark, and partly because when we were originally imagining this, it was simply not at that level.
Well, that's something you wouldn't really believe. You go, well, no, people aren't really going to believe that, right? That's kind of a little too far-fetched.
Yeah.
A lot of what's happened in the last year and a half has been, I've been looking at it and going, if I wrote this into a story, it would be critiqued as not believable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, it kind of goes too far. Especially, yeah. Well, the anti-science thing, there's always been, of course, a group of people that doesn't want to see a doctor or doesn't want to believe in science to a bit, but it just seemed to be out of hand, and it's just kind of beyond belief at how strong it really is.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the weird thing. That's why I always wonder, you know, because when people write the books and they have some sort of pandemic in it, if they happen to have written that sort of thing before it happened, that would be kind of cool.
Well, we're sort of saved slightly because we didn't base this on a pandemic situation. We based it on what happened here in America during Prohibition,
right,
when our government poisoned all alcohol supplies so that if you drank, you would probably die. They really did kill people for doing something that the government didn't want them to do. And granted, they made it very public. There is poison in all of this stuff. Don't drink it. But we drew from that idea of someone believing that they have the right to make someone else's decisions for them to the degree that they would poison water supplies and food supplies so that other people couldn't.
Not much different from what's actually happening right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we were somewhat saved in that it wasn't directly analogous to what was happening with the pandemic, but I definitely kicked the wall and cussed a little bit as we realized when book 5 was going to come out and in what circumstances. It was a painful realization.
So what we can do is I can start a conspiracy now that I think there was an ES and Olivia in Wuhan a little bit ago, Al.
Please don't. And well, guess what? They're
doing something for their book. That's what I'm saying. You know,
yeah.
Just
right.
Yeah, it's all one big marketing scheme.
That's very, very that's right. Well thought out. That's great. Well, geez, this has been great. I've really enjoyed talking to you guys. We are running out of time. Plus, I've got to go to an anti-vax rally here.
Yeah, I've got an NRA rally to go to.
Yeah, I've got lots of things to, you know, I got a lot of things going on. I got to get some.
Well, attention. I literally have a pagan ceremony to get to tonight. Well, so
there you go, you know. And, geez, we had Michael Hughes on, and he was part of that big magic for the resistance, you know, they were all
that was really cool.
Yeah. that was fun. Anyway, our guests have been from the writing group OE Tiramin, and the book we were talking about is The Hands Were Given, Aces High, Joker's Wild, Book 1. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you so much for having us. This was an amazing conversation.
This is outstanding.
Yeah, this was lovely.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.